Well, let's just like talk and make sure that the sound is going to be okay.
Say something. Testing. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Two certain solemn silence and a dull dark dock in a pestilential prison with a lifelong lock, awaiting the sensation of a short, sharp shock with achievement to be.
I'd rather be a lover than a fighter. Cause all my life I've been fighting. Never felt a feeling of comfort. All this time I've been hiding. And I never had someone to come on. Oh, nah, I'm so used to shit. Love only left me alone. But I'm at one with the side. I found peace in your vibes. Can't show me there's no point in trying. I'm at one. And I've been quiet for too long. I found peace in your vibes. Can't show me there's no point in trying. I'm at one. And I've been silent for too long.
TOA. So it's Cynthia, Ashley, and Sarah, and we are in New York City together, and my dog happens to be present, and we are all in the same room with a proper microphone, and we are actually having a great time after 2 days of drama, which was drama that we kind of expected around this incredibly impossible show that we apparently have devoted some part of our lives to.
Too much. Drama that we invited.
Drama
that we, like, sought out.
Yeah, well, yeah, drama that we invite and, Jesus Christ, like, anyway. So there has been about, I want to say, somewhere between 45 and 50 asks wondering how we are, expressing vitriolic hate for Alex Gonza. And what's the third bucket? Oh.
People who did not like what we had to say at all.
And I think that one.
People who thought that the ad was poorly written.
Yeah, but it's just like three. I think that's 3 out of 40 asks that were like, you guys are idiots, which
you
just
did not like it at all. And you're probably not listening to this because you don't like it. You don't like us.
Yeah, which is fine. There's always a minority of people who will do that kind of thing. So what we should all say is that we sort of will talk a little bit about the last few days and what we, I guess, was acknowledged by Alex Gonza that Quinn died. And
that was not acknowledged.
He said Quinn died a hero.
He said he died a hero, but I don't believe it.
Okay, so Ashley thinks that he's a liar, which...
Okay, so the showrunners just...
are dicks.
Okay, well, that we all agree on. Well, so also, in addition to this ridiculous show that we all thought was a prestige, excellent drama at one point... I also tortured while Ashley was taking a nap. I didn't torture her. I think she enjoyed it. I had Sarah watch an episode of The X-Files, reboot.
We watched 2 episodes. I mean, it definitely wasn't torture. I watched like 3.5 seasons of that show on my own.
Yeah, so we watched Memento Mori, which is a show that I truly believe with all the right motives and intentions, I believe 512 had references to.
Yeah, it definitely
overtly,
did.
Like overtly from the letter, from the hallway, from
black
the blue
jacket.
Things, from the black leather jacket, that like whatever. There's so many things. But then we did the reboot, which was like a complete joyous episode.
It was so funny. It was so...
What was it called? Shit.
It was called like Mulder and Scully Meet a Werebeast or something like that. And the premise of it. It was totally campy and totally
meta and stupid.
And extremely self-aware. And it was, you could tell it was like a commentary on the X-Files fandom and
the relationship.
Yeah, just completely ridiculous. The premise of it was like, they thought that a man was turning into a lizard, but it turns out the lizard was turning into a man. And he was like, this
is... Spoiler alert!
He was...
No, there's no sense. No one cares.
It's so dumb.
But it's so dumb that, like, the writers know it's so dumb.
It's really funny, like, this lizard turned into an Australian man who is a ginger.
He is a ginger.
And, oh my god, it was like a commentary on, like, by the way, that's the beep. That's and Cynthia's home. Beep.
I have a mysterious beep in my apartment. But by the way, I showed it. Part of the reason I showed it too. By the way,
it's only mysterious because you like just don't even care.
I don't care.
To figure out where it's coming from.
I don't care. Once you have a couple kids and you have toys in your home, you don't care about mysterious beeping because, like, lights go down and toys talk and.
Neither Sarah nor I have children.
I know. So, but the reason that I was showing this episode of the reboot is that for those of you who have ever watched the X-Files or almost any of the particularly the reboot episodes, there's like a joy. There's like sort of this like joy and celebration, and as campy and silly and hilarious as it is, the relationship is more or less taken seriously on the show, even in the reboot. Especially in the reboot, actually. And I was just like trying, I just want to get away from the fucking tragedy that this.
Yeah, it was really a fun episode to watch. We were laughing the entire way because it was so absurd, but it was totally like, it was totally owning the fact that it was absurd. Like,
there was, and like, I was happy and they acknowledged the love. There was
like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, yes. Aspect of it. That was, like, fun to watch, even for someone, you know, who didn't totally get a lot of the context behind it, because I haven't seen
it. I think that's part of the issue with Homeland, is that all of these people have history with shows that were just fucking fun.
And now they're taking themselves way too goddamn seriously.
But the thing is, like, weird, and then we have to stop talking about it, because it's depressing. But it's just, like, the show, like, used to be pretty funny, like, in a dark way. Like, the way that Mad Men's kind of funny. Like, it used to have a sense of humor. It used to have characters that were funny, that, like, didn't get killed off. And there was, like, an overall lightness around it. And then ever since, I think since after season 3, since Brody died, it's gotten really dreary. And it's gotten progressively drearier. And I'm like, why? Because it's not leading to better television. Like, it'd be one thing if it was getting darker, but also the quality was getting better.
Like in a Batman kind of way or something.
Yeah, yeah. Like, exactly, yes. But this is just, like, so fucking depressing. And it's, like, so bleak. And it's really exhausting to, like, continue to, you know, discuss it.
To watch and to discuss it and to talk about it every single day.
Yeah,
and
it's really exhausting.
We don't actually. What's interesting is, so the three of us are together and we can talk about the ad and the Hollywood Reporter and Gonza's answer. We probably should a bit. But we haven't been talking that much about Homeland because at some point we're pretty positive. The three of us are really smart girls, but we're also, like, positive people, and at some point you're just like, really? Like, you guys so served up something that was supposed to be so much better, and you had fabulous actors and fabulous enough writers and, like, a premise that could have taken you to such a much better place. And so the three of us have been together for the last 2 days. Sarah's moving to New York, which is awesome. She signed a lease today and had a look on her face like, Jesus fucking Christ, what have I just done? So she's moving to New
York. Not because I'm moving to New York, but because financially moving to New York is a little bit of a, like, oh, fuck, kind of a moment.
For sure. Moving to New York financially is, for anyone, anyhow, is always like a, oh, my God, moment.
Anyways. Oh. But we have not... We published one ask this entire time that we've been together, which was the one being like, are you guys okay? Why are you, like...
Yeah, because we just wanted to...
And so we felt bad. And so we published that.
We are completely fine.
We are all
completely... We're like, we, Let's see, what have we done?
We have... How many bottles of wine have we consumed?
Too many bottles of wine, but we've gone to two plays.
Last night we went to the Red Lobster.
Oh my God.
Cynthia was...
I insisted everyone go to Red Lobster.
And because I just wanted to go home. I spent the entire... So... Because I was tired, guys. I was so tired. And I just wanted to go home and go to bed.
Despite not being...
And Ash is a vegan, and Red Lobster is no place for a vegan.
She assembled an okay meal of sides.
I had a baked potato, and I had asparagus, and I had broccoli, and I watched as Cynthia exploded.
Okay. I have to set the stage. Okay, so we get out of the play. It's like 10:30. The play was very long.
And it wasn't awesome. It was okay.
It wasn't like an actual play. It had no plot. It was Prince of Broadway, which I made them go to. Mea culpa.
It wasn't bad, but it was like, I'm not a huge like Broadway aficionado or like nerd, and so I didn't totally get a lot of the songs. The people who were doing it were like extremely talented,
but it was like next to somebody who may or may not have been famous, but he wasn't the famous person that I thought he was, so I don't know who it was.
Anyways, it was probably like 25 to 30 minutes too long. But
and when the Phantom of the Opera song came on at the end, I could not stop giggling because that was just anyone over the age of 35, which neither of these girls are, like, you can't actually watch that freaking like scene and not just dissolve into giggles because it's just...
I have like no cultural context for that though, so I was just like, this is very like emotional.
I've never seen the Phantom of the Opera because, as they say,
how can you pretend to be a Broadway girl and not have seen Phantom of the
Opera?
Because
it's one of those shows, like, it's... I was finishing my sentence.
So, I'll just keep interrupting you too. As Ashley flips,
you can't do gestures on a podcast. People don't know what you're doing.
That's fine. So, as they mentioned in the show, Phantom of the Opera is the longest running Broadway show in theater history.
So, just to be defiant, you don't go see it?
No, just because it's going to be around. Like, whenever I run out of things to watch, it'll still be on stage. It'll still be happening.
I have a hard time. Okay, so the Phantom anything of the to Opera, do with Andrew Lloyd Webber, anything to do with like that heavy organ music, like, I literally just dissolve into like irrational 16-year-old giggles because it's such a reference point of when I was in like my, I don't know, 20s, maybe teens. Like, it was, Phantom of the Opera was such a phenomenon that it's like trying to take, I don't know, it's like, yeah, it's like trying
we
to take.
We also just don't like Andrew Lloyd Webber. We went to see Sunset Boulevard earlier this year, and Cynthia and I nearly walked out at intermission, and the only thing that stopped us, apart from Glenn Close and the fact that it was her birthday, was the fact that we had brought someone who really wanted to go see it.
Yeah.
Anyhow. We're in the theater, which is the fucking coldest theater I've probably ever been in. And I didn't have a sweater, and so we're in there for like 2.5 hours. We get out. It's like 10:30. Cynthia needs to go to the Duane Reade.
Okay, for reasons we don't need to go into, I had to go to the Duane Reade to buy, like, something. And it is, like, the Times Square Duane Reade. Or it's a Walgreens.
It's, like, fucking impossible to get to.
But it's also just...
Because you're in Times Square, like, middle of the night.
It was on the way to Red Lobster,
It was on the way to Red Lobster.
It was convenient, at least. That's oh my like God, this. So we're no one who lives in New York, which I do, ever wants to be in Times Square normally.
On like a Friday night.
And on a Friday night, and you're surrounded by tourists from Indiana, and if you're listening from
I don't
Indiana.
Live in New York, but I fucking hate Times Square.
It's literally like it's like wall to wall. It's like wall to wall people.
It's yeah. hell on earth.
And yeah, then
so we had to walk like through four blocks of that to get to the Walgreens or the Duane Reade or whatever it was. It was on the way to the Red Lobster, which was the like grand.
It was our final destination.
It was like the event of the night. Is we had to go to the Red Lobster because.
Cynthia
loves
so
Red Lobster.
I am embracing my white trash, goddammit.
So
everyone needs a little white trash in their soul. And by the way, if you're not white, I acknowledge the fact that I need to acknowledge all sorts of other like trash in my life of all like origins. But yeah, no, my white trash is Red Lobster.
So, I'd never been to a Red Lobster before, which was, like, shocking to you guys, because I grew up in the suburbs, and so...
Well, I suburbs had also never been to Red Lobster before Cynthia took me last
year. Anyway, so we get
really
to the Red
makes
Lobster.
Red Lobster makes me really happy.
Yes, we know. You were so excited.
She was giddy the entire night. She was so excited to go there. She was so excited once we got in. She was excited in the, like, elevator on the way up to
She's
the second floor.
She's in the elevator from the first floor to the second.
So we can look at the tanks. Yeah,
we have to look at the tanks, which, like, stop, like, midway between the first and second floor. So it's not even, like, a thing.
She was really excited when we ordered. She was excited when the bread came. She was excited when the lobster
okay,
came.
I'm sorry,
Sarah brought the bread home.
The goddamn bread at Red Lobster is like second to none. It's like the Pop Rocks of bread.
It's like
it's the Pop Rocks of bread.
But the best part about being at the Red Lobster, besides the fact that it made you so happy, is her lobster was very like filled with lobster juice. And you know how you have to crack it so that she can get the meat out. As she's cracking it, the like juice flew like right on me.
Everywhere.
And then
her lobster ejaculated.
The like results.
Quinn couldn't have ejaculated better.
Oh my god. The results and like the sort of leftover of you with your lobster was there was like white shit on the table.
Yeah,
on
like
the wall.
On the wall. It was on the chair next to Sarah because Sarah's a lefty, so no one can sit next to her at dinner. And
except for other left-handed people.
Yeah. There were pictures taken. There was a lot of lobster goo.
That lobster had a.
But we're classy.
What was the joke
bunch.
That I said in the cab? What was the joke that I said in the cab?
I don't know. I was so tired. I like didn't even want to talk to you anymore. Oh.
The lobster had a happy ending.
Which is the title of one of Cynthia's specs.
Which apparently I had no irony about.
Speaking of Cynthia's fix,
no,
guys.
No, shh.
You need to.
I'm not finishing any fix. Shush.
Tell her she needs to finish closure.
Oh my god, I'm not. How? After Dar, there's no way there can be romantic anal in any fix.
The other thing that happened at the Red Lobster is that we were talking about this very subject, and Cynthia said romantic anal, and the guy who was sitting behind her did like a full
like
one. He turned completely around.
Okay, so
as you said romantic
so for
anal.
The for the like 20 people listening that are loyal fic readers, or maybe 50 or whatever, this podcast weirdly has a shocking number of people who listen to it. So I was. The one thing after Quinn died
he's fine.
Okay, he's fine in Ashley's imagination. And he's probably fine in death, whatever. But the one thing I was like, you know what I will do? I'm going to continue to watch this show and be part of this blog because mostly I care about friends and this community. But then I was like, and the only other thing I'm going to do is finish my goddamn fix. Because I have three. How many do I have?
You have Making It Right, and you have Closure, and you have the teen fic that we were writing together. And
right.
She needs to finish the second chapter of.
So
I started it. so blame Cynthia for the fact
yeah,
that you don't
so I made this internal commitment that I would finish those because I really do enjoy writing, but God, it's so hard when you're this sad about a show. It's super hard.
Meanwhile, I'm not sad. I don't really actually have an excuse, guys. Sorry.
You are, though, writing. You're like, fully into your next chapter for your fic.
I am fully into my next chapter, and I have another fic, which is, like, moderately green pen-ish.
Okay, so like meanwhile, Green Pen, who is Sarah, is
sitting next to us.
On order to write fluff.
No, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah, we have demanded.
My next fic idea was to write Carrie Matheson and Robin Wright, the real life Robin Wright in a fic together.
Wait, you didn't make up a character for her? It was just Robin Wright?
I think her name's gonna be Robin.
Oh, good God,
that's, just,
Sarah.
That's like a ton of imagination.
So, anyway, Sarah.
Does she have an abusive husband named Sean?
No.
Who dated Madonna and, like, abused Madonna? Anyway, so
I have a little
Sarah
bit more imagination
is
that.
Supposed to write fluff if someone
she pays better.
Money to the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund via our CrowdRise.
Which we will do. We are going to have a little mini auction.
I don't promise anything. I mean, I promise I'll write something, but I can't promise.
I think we have, like, I think we have, like, 6 to 8 fic writers.
Well, we have Fragi, we have Lore, we have Zephy, we have you, we have Sarah, we have
you.
But again, do
you.
Not expect anything
as close as this.
2 years. Yes.
No. With it, you cannot sell. You cannot actually do a. You cannot actually do, like, something that's supposed to... That's
a fic option and then say wait for 2 years to get
Yeah, no, it will be
and
like, it will be like it what we have in mind, and then we can maybe...
Most importantly, we have Ideal Flower contributing, but I've already claimed hers.
How much are you going to pay for it?
I am going to pay as much as I need to for her to finish... The Galway Bay series, which is my favorite fucking fic, and that's the fifth time that I have recommended it on this website.
Yeah. So there will be a little bit of a mini auction coming up, which will hopefully raise like $500, $1,000 or whatever. It'll be
you
like.
You guys realize that now since we talked about it publicly, we have to do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Frankie is like, do you want me to set it up? And we're so lazy here in New York, drinking too much rosé wine. That we're still raising money.
We have a good amount, and Sarah and I are leaving tomorrow.
Yeah, no, to be clear, though, we are still raising money for Intrepid Fallen Heroes, and I, you know...
We've already raised over $5,000.
And I think it'll... And I'm actually pretty confident that with a fic writing thing... Like, we'll keep it going till it feels like it's right, but I think the original goal was $10,000, and we'll get as close as we can. And listen... No fucking, like, it's so funny because asks come in on both sides. On one side, they're like, oh my God, that's all you raised. And the other side, they're like, that's so amazing. And it doesn't actually, it's better than anyone else did
and it's
for Quinn,
yep.
For Peter freaking
bang,
Quinn.
Bang.
It's better than zero. And
it helps people.
$5,000 is nothing to sneeze at, so.
Yeah, and also it's...
And I think it's going to be a lot more than 5,000 when we're done. So, I feel actually really good about that, and we took a stand, and we made a difference,
and to
they
be clear,
responded.
We believe that every little bit helps. We understand that there are people who are not in a financial position to be donating, and that's fine. We appreciate that, and we understand it. And if you would like to express your discontent with a letter, that would be great. I have not done that yet.
Neither have I, but I feel like...
Sarah.
Oops.
We all will.
I think my letter is going to be, what the fuck, guys?
Pretty much, right?
I kind of woke up with I've been thinking about the letter I would write, and I woke up this morning thinking about how it would be. It would be something like...
I feel like you always wake up and have, like, a bunch of...
I do. I'm
thoughts about the blog.
My clarity is in the morning.
A lot of, like, our conversations began with, I woke up this morning and I and I like was all of a sudden crystal clear on.
I know. Blank. Well, the days get muddled and then the mornings are clear. And no, I woke up, I kind of woke up just being like, you know what? I'm pretty sure Homeland's paying attention.
40 minutes. Cynthia was like passed out unconscious. Ashley,
no, I was just napping. I was not passing. Yeah. So I was authentically napping.
She was. She was napping. I was awake. And
then I was like dark, but I was dark for a full 90 minutes or so.
Like a couple hours. Like because we I kept looking at your WhatsApp thing and you had last been active at 4:44.
And I woke up around 6, yeah.
Right before I got to New York.
There was, 300 WhatsApp messages later.
Yeah, yes. The thing that got me so angry about it was, his statement was, lowest common denominator, and what I mean by that is, you can address your most passionate, loyal and devoted fans who know everything about the series and then not give them credit for doing that. So it just felt really insulting to my intelligence, the response that he gave about, you know, I didn't say anything because I wanted the performance to speak for itself. And it's like, dude, you can't say that when 24 hours after season 3, after Brody died, you were out giving
interviews to every press outlet. And they're still fucking talking about it. They're still talking about Damian Lewis and his performance and what he brought to the show.
That and doesn't really bother me much as the fact that you, it was in the ad itself, the fact that there's a discrepancy, and it's like, you can't say that I wanted to do this time when we already know that that's not how your behavior has been in the past, and that's clearly not what the silence means.
And furthermore, Rupert Friend was on the show for a lot longer than Damian Lewis was. He didn't originate the show as Damian Lewis did, but he was on it for 5 seasons.
Yeah. I don't really want to get into a whole, Brody versus Quinn, because it's, so...
Well, it was a very disingenuous statement.
It was extremely disingenuous, but that debate is, so 3 years ago. And it's really boring, in my opinion.
The Damian and Rupert one is for sure a boring comparison, but for, my only regret about, okay, so first of all, the Hollywood Reporter thing was super interesting because I'm happy to say that I know that it went up to the publisher and they weren't sure they were going to publish it, and then they did, and then they clearly prepped Gonza for a response, and Gonza...
They reached out to their Showtime contact.
Well, they have an account manager for Showtime, which, as they should, because Showtime buys a ton of ads for them. It's all just normal industry stuff, which I'm aware of, but I was impressed that they gave us a full page ad, and they didn't ask Not Our Homeland to change that many things, but they did ask for a couple changes. The one thing I wish we would have done is to own the fact that we are, for whatever reasons, largely a feminist viewership, and it was hard. We didn't want to seem like we were fangirls, right? We didn't want to seem like we were all like, oh my God, it's all about Quinn. Because even though plenty of us, adore Quinn, it's not really what this was about.
Well, no. And I have a friend who is in publishing, who is in journalism, and I sent him a link to the Hollywood Reporter and said, what do you think about this? And he said, I think the ad is great. I would have left out point number 3, which was the one about Quinn.
One about the difference between...
The one about confirming his death, and et cetera, et cetera. And he said, that's the one I would have left out. And I was like, fuck off, you're a dude. And you don't care as much about Homeland as I do, clearly.
Yeah. Well, I think to men, it was like, look, he died.
There's definitely a point to be made, though, about the fact that that's actually what he responded to, and it's the easiest thing to respond to because it's
easy to take the position of, look, I'm just a writer, this is our show, and this is a small group of, like, viewers that are obviously mostly female. Like, that was the subtext of his response, yeah. And it was very patronizing. And if there's one thing that I can't fucking stand, it's being patronized. Like, it is my biggest pet peeve, and men do it all the time, and
it's also the one point that he could walk back from.
So I don't even think it's that.
It's the one point that he could walk back from. You can't walk back from saying
easiest thing to respond to and make it seem like these are a bunch of crazy people.
Yes,
like you can't respond to any of the other things without seeming like a total dick.
He gave us 95 words.
And also, let's talk about Pinky. So, Pinky, what's her? Pinky 123? What's her?
143, which is I love you in pager speak.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's? So, we chat with Pinkies on WhatsApp. So, we have various versions of WhatsApp for various reasons. Pinkies is a really smart woman who has some relationships in the entertainment community, and she's super passionate about.
She's very lucky to be friends with her.
She's really, really like Ashley and Sarah in the way that she's really passionate about Carrie. But she's also just really passionate about the show in the sense that she just feels like. But where she and I meet, because I'm more of a Quinn person, where she and I meet is that we're just super fucking clear that we're both women in our 40s, in our case, who are like, you know what? We have watched lots of shows. There are plenty of super smart showrunners that don't treat people like this. And so we had her on a conference call because we were just talking about stuff the other morning quickly. And she was like, she's like, I'm raging around my house doing laundry. Like, she's like doing her thing and like living her. We all live our lives. And she's like, it's not actually freaking acceptable. There are super smart showrunners who went to Ivy Leagues and whatever freaking pedigree he's like raging, like whatever informs his ego. It's not actually okay. It's really not okay to be this contemptuous of people who really, really love this character, these two characters, and this show.
Well, he is contemptuous toward fans in general, and I know I owe you guys a thing on Alex Gonza and fandom, but we have been so busy this weekend, just, like, doing other stuff.
Are we really busy?
We've been so busy been this weekend.
It's August. We're drinking.
We've been very busy. Napping and walking the dog and drinking
playing
wine.
Playing with the dog's dog.
And going to Broadway shows.
Yes. So
these are important things.
These are things that I have been doing instead of writing my Alex Gonza in fandom thing, which.
Okay, but if you were to boil it down, Alex Gonza has a history of.
He has a history of not engaging with fans. Like, I don't honestly know. I looked back at his history as a writer and the things that he did, and he did 24 sort of because he had no money. And Howard Gordon had to ask him multiple times to do 24. He invited him onto the show many times. And the fact that 24 was a fan-driven show. It was a show for the fans. We didn't have a fandom, per se. We didn't have opinions on who was dating who. Why is Sarah doing the thing with her face? But we did have, it was a fun show to watch, and it was made for people to enjoy watching.
And he lasted for a year.
2 years. He was on
the last two seasons. He was on the last two seasons.
So he was on the X-Files for one season. He was on 24 for two seasons. What else can we quickly?
Well, he got started with Beauty and the Beast.
I actually listened to the podcast that he did with that woman. It's called, like, Little Known Facts or something like that. I actually listened to it. It was
fascinating. And he...
Why?
It was... I felt at the end that I understood who he was as a person.
Alex Danza would like to take this opportunity to invite you onto our podcast at any time.
So, back to what I was saying. He's very private, and he acknowledged that on the podcast, that he doesn't really give a lot of interviews and talk about, like, his past and his private life, but the kind of show that it is, it's like, you start at the beginning, you talk about where you're from, you talk about your family, where they're from, and you go basically from the beginning up to where you are now, and that's what he did, and it was really interesting. His, like, he was, like, born in, like, Japan or Singapore or something like that. His father was, like, a doctor in the Navy. His mother was an expat from Russia, maybe, who had, like, moved to China. They moved to the Bay Area when he was a baby. He's the oldest of three brothers who he acknowledged were much more talented than he is, who don't do sort of, like, artistic or creative type.
One's a lawyer or something, right?
One's, like, an architect, and the other is, like, a social worker, a teacher, or something like that. But, you know, he talked a lot about, like, what his ambitions were when he was in school. And then he also talked a lot about, like, his partnership with Howard Gordon and what it was like on The X-Files and how he never wanted to run a writer's room like that. And he talked about...
The context for that, for anyone who cares, is that the X-Files writer's room was known to be super competitive.
And it's not really what... I think normally when you think of a writer's room, you either think of, like, a comedy writer's room where it's a bunch of people sitting around a table, all pitching jokes and stuff like that. It's very collaborative. And the Homeland writer's room is similar. They're not sitting around a table. They're sitting in a room that's basically filled with a bunch of couches. And they're talking, you know, about the story, and there's a corkboard on one of the walls where they put up all the cards, and it's very collaborative and casual, and they pitch the story together, and then at the very end of it, one of the writers is given the assignment to go and actually write the episode. So it's very collaborative, whereas The X-Files was everyone off in their own separate offices trying to come up with ideas for scripts,
I know a lot of
had to
that.
Pitch
so,
them to Chris Carter.
Yeah, that's a well known.
The X-Files was more, they had more standalone stuff.
Well, yeah, you could actually do that on The X-Files because it was procedural that way.
Like, you could never do that with Homeland or with 24 because every episode really
was
genuinely relies on what came before.
It was a central narrative.
But there could still be an aspect of competitiveness in terms of, like, I want to pitch the most ideas that actually make their way into the script. And it was clear from how he talked about in the podcast that he, like, wasn't comfortable, like, with that dynamic and with that environment. And he, like, needed to leave. And so I didn't realize that between the time he was on The X-Files in, like, 1994 and when he went to go do 24 in, like, 2007 or 2008.
He had a couple shows that
he started. Yeah, he had two shows that he created and was the showrunner for, which were both didn't go past a season. But I didn't realize that he had, like, previous showrunner experience.
I mean, my thing with Alex Ganza is just that he never lasted more than a couple seasons with anything, so he...
Until Homeland.
So he started out with the show that he created with Howard Gordon, and then they went to the X-Files... No, they went to Beauty and the Beast. And Beauty and the Beast ran for a couple seasons, and for three seasons total, and they had written...
And they went to the X-Files together.
Howard stayed, then Howard jumped over... I don't know. Howard's done, like, a ton of
Howard
stuff.
Howard went from the X-Files to 24.
And he became the showrunner for 24 after, like, during season 5, which is widely...
Howard did, yeah.
Yes. The first season that Howard was the showrunner for is widely considered... the best season of 24.
We're doing a really bad job of not talking about home. Like, we've devoted, like, the last 20 minutes talking about Alex Gonza.
Yeah, but nobody, like, if they're listening to the Hell Yeah Homeland podcast, they expect us to talk about Homeland a little bit. So, anyway, Alex Gonza joined 24 in season 7, I think possibly with the TV movie, because season 6...
Okay, but go. But your point of... your actual points about Alex Gonza are interesting.
Well, my actual points about Alex Gonza are just that he has never maintained a relationship in the writer's room for more than a few seasons. His relationship with Howard Gordon, we were talking about...
And his relationship with fans.
No, that's interesting, and I'm going to write all about that, I promise. But I were talking about how Gonza considers himself Salieri.
Oh, God. Well, that's
we're moving on. This is no longer...
That's actually, I can find it, and I can find sources for this. There is a news article out there where Alex Gonza apparently, like, he took great joy in hiring F. Murray, who won his Oscar for playing Salieri, because he apparently keeps a statue or a quote or something from Salieri on his desk, because... Alex Gonza never really, which, by the way, give the man credit. At least he's owning up to the fact that he has never regarded himself as Mozart and always regarded himself as Salieri. And I will go on record, and if you edit me out, Sarah, fuck off. No, I just think that is incredibly revealing. I think he's a really insecure person. And I think he got really lucky in the beginning, and I think,
Well, Homeland was kind of passed off to him by Howard Gordon.
That's actually not true, but...
Yeah, how? Where do you get that?
Because Howard Gordon was originally the one pitched the idea.
So that's not actually true. You should listen to the podcast. It's really interesting. And if they're going to write about... If they're going to write about his relationship with fandom, you should listen to basically the most revealing conversation that, like, that he's probably ever given to
Sarah's doing media. This in public just to make me do this, just to make me do it.
Anyways, the podcast is really interesting.
I have not listened to it yet, but I will.
Yeah, the show wasn't passed off to him by Howard Gordon. They were pitched it together, and they shared the same agent or something like that. Like, it was a project that they wanted to do together and something that they'd always wanted to do together. The reason that Alex became the showrunner is because Howard had a contract with Fox and they didn't want him working on a tiny little Showtime show.
By the way, it's still a pretty tiny Showtime show.
Yeah, it's still a pretty tiny Showtime show. And Howard has worked with Fox on further 24 series.
He basically just, yeah, he is, like, under contract with Fox and is not allowed really to, like, be in the home and writer's room and basically work on any other shows besides Fox shows.
Is that true?
Yeah. Possibly. I mean, he has, like, his most recent show was Tyrant.
Because I just want... They were talking about... Can we just get Howard to run this goddamn fucking shit show?
I would love it if he ran the show. Howard, I have recently been reading his books. He's written a couple of novels.
I can't believe you read his books, but you won't listen to, like, this 30-minute podcast with Alex Gonza.
Cynthia is nodding. I don't like to listen to things. I like to read things. I like to...
Good Lord. No, you just like whatever. To be stubborn.
All right.
Okay, moving on. We're boring everyone.
Except for Cody. Cody looks super happy.
So we are probably kind of winding up.
Yeah.
I think.
Okay,
so.
Cut.
No, just kidding.
No, I think. I think it's worthwhile noting that the fandom, which is a highly dysfunctional fandom, but for the most part, at its best self, is. Most like a fiery bunch of passionate, well-educated, excellent women. I mean, that's generally who the 300-400 people that we most have interacted with and who are part of Tumblr and Twitter. I'm like, listen, they all like kind of came together and we like finally just said, what the fuck is going on? And we got a response. And the response was,
fuck you.
The response was, fuck you, flaccid, like disrespectful. And I don't know, we're not quite at the point, or at least I'm not quite at the point where I can figure out where I feel about that in terms of the blog and being a fan and loving Carrie Matheson and the memory of Peter Quinn. But it was worth doing. It was worth doing because it needed to be done.
It did need to be done. This is a fucking ridiculous situation that we have found ourselves in. No, I mean, I would invite you guys to tell us if you have a similar experience with another show, but I cannot see or imagine another show treating its audience this way. The fact that they are renewed for 2 seasons in advance is really, I think that is a huge
and point. Hiring a bunch of white guys.
Hire a bunch of fucking white men. Although they did add, there's a new woman in the writer's room, Deborah Kahn, who has a really good pedigree, and I'm interested to see what she brings to the table.
Yeah, that's the fucking problem with the show, is it you know, for the past 2 years has like been really disappointing, but I have like a sliver of hope that it will be better and it will be worth my time and worth my investment and worth, like, you know, the love that I clearly have for it. It's like a relationship that's
you have spent tens of thousands of hours.
Yeah, don't remind me.
We hadn't talked about the fact that Hell Yeah Homeland is about to get to its millionth page view.
Yeah, which is pretty fucking awesome, and it's a very cool milestone because
most of those were way before it was a group blog. So, like there is something to be said for, like, I mean, it's a show that. Yeah, I mean, let's take a moment and just say it's a show that we would not be here and be friends, actually, to the point.
Well, it brought us all together, and I am very grateful to it because I'm sitting here petting a really cute dog because of Homelands.
Well, no, my dog is a cool dog. But what I want to say is, if I have anything remotely profound, which is probably not profound to say, it's that Sarah's been running the leading blog for Homeland with some competition here and there for 4 years, and she's about to get her like a millionth page view, a million, and on a tiny show, which actually has, I mean, the viewership of Homeland is pretty small.
Homeland on their dashboard, which doesn't count for views.
These are things you inform me of. So I think that, like, there was something about Carrie Matheson that brought us all into Homeland, and Claire Danes, if you or any of your friends happen to be listening, we invite you to be the feminist warrior we expect you to be. But in the meantime, we are disappointed and sad, but we will continue watching and we will continue to hope for
probably with a little bit less seriousness.
Yeah, we can't take the show seriously the way we used to. It's just not happening.
And I hope that, you know, the last thing I'll say about the Nutter Homeland stuff is that something did need to be done. Nothing had really occurred that was at all effective or inclusive or whatever. And it needed to happen. And
We spent four months. By the way, it got picked up by the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Huffington Post, Salon.com.
Chicago Tribune.
How many, like, international? Three Australian publications.
A Polish one. A couple of French ones. A Spanish one.
New Zealand.
Two in the UK, I think.
Which, by the way, publishers don't allow that stuff to go into their newspapers unless they probably watch the show themselves or they think it's interesting.
And people take Homeland seriously. Because
it's sort of problematic.
Right?
People take Homeland seriously. Done.
I think that people do. I think people take Homeland seriously as a prestige show which has a really, really good pedigree, which has a good history, and I think that Ganza and Showtime and the people involved have been really riding the crest of what Homeland used to be. It's not a show that we used to know. Special anymore. It's lost its shine, and they've gone to prescience for...
And sacrifice of character and relationships.
Yes. And so, because they don't know how else to compete, and awards mean everything. I'm sitting here on Cynthia's floor looking at her bookcase with the Homeland Revealed book.
Yeah.
And all I can think is the show isn't the show that I started watching.
Sarah?
After season four.
I'm just thinking of, like, an hour ago when we all agreed to do the podcast and not be depressing.
I don't actually think it's been that depressing.
Just sitting here being like, this, like, I'm looking at the book, and
well,
it's just not the show
the
that,
right
that, that, you know, there's, this is not the show that I am watching anymore, and it's just like, that's all valid and that's all true, but, like, I think that, I guess I just kind of want to... I think there's room to be critical and disappointed in the show, but not sort of just resort to what they've done, which is just substitute, like dreariness and, like, bleak shit for, like, substance.
This is a fucking entertainment industry, and Homeland is not entertaining anymore. And that
it's
is
really
a huge
not
problem.
Like, you guys, like, I fucking, like, dread watching the show.
Like, why this Sunday night have to happen? I used to look like when 24 was on.
Sunday nights, I'm like, oh fuck, like, I gotta watch this now.
I used to look forward to Mondays because 24 was on. I'd be like, shit,
I used to look forward to the X-Files. Like, it wouldn't always make me happy,
yeah,
but
it would just make.
There was just something that would make me, like, so happy.
But 24
happy.
Was
and
always
the Americans.
On Monday nights at 9 p.m., which, as you all know, I go to bed early.
Yeah.
I have a job that requires me to get up early, and I have always, during the course of 24, thought, oh my God, why isn't it Monday yet? Nobody who works in a normal 9-to-5 or whatever, like, comparative hours, Monday through Friday, looks forward to Monday. Nobody does.
But you did for 24.
For 24, I did. For Homeland, it's kind of fun when I'm hanging out with Cynthia and Sarah and, or whoever, and watching the show. And
but don't you have, you have this pit in your stomach.
I would not have watched Homeland Season 6 live if I didn't have you assholes.
That's a good ending.
Yeah.
Should we end there?
I think we should end there.
All right, we're done now.